ABC Radio National, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation's network of ideas, broadcast and podcast worldwide. Hello, I'm Andrew Ford, and coming up is an interview from The Music Show on Radio National. Some of the music you'll hear in the interview has been shortened to meet copyright restrictions. But if you visit our website at abc.net.au/rn/musicshow, you can listen to the whole program as audio on demand. You can check the playlists, read transcripts of past interviews, and send us an email. Claire Bowditch and The New Slang. The album is Modern Day Addiction and the song Bigger Than the Money, which you might say is true of the arts in Australia. Claire Bowditch is in our Melbourne studio. Marsha McGuire and Graham Wood are in our Perth studio. Welcome to the three of you.
Thanks, Andy.
And not here, but I talked to her on the phone yesterday, is the great jazz sax player and composer Sandy Evans. And I thought we might start by hearing from Sandy.
I'm absolutely horrified that discussion of the arts has been absent from political campaigns for, I'd say, easily 10 years now. I feel that politicians are either embarrassed or fearful of the topic, thinking that it will alienate voters and possibly remind them of Paul Keating. The way I see it is that a country's greatest natural resource is its people. And the main manifestation of this resource is through art and culture. And this is an incredible strength that we have in Australia, yet politicians are scared to talk about it. Artists will go on and make their art no matter what, but how we treat them is another matter. Part of the fear of politicians talking about arts is that they see it in opposition to economic growth. They think we just want to suck the system dry. I think it's the complete opposite of that. I think a flourishing arts scene is an economic asset, and that people will come to Australia because we have good music, we have good art, we have good venues. They won't come here to just have a look at our minds.
Marshall McGuire, are you surprised that the politicians are refusing to discuss the arts?
No, I'm not surprised. Sad to say, Sandy's right, it hasn't been an issue in elections for probably a decade, and it may be a reaction to, you know, Paul Keating and the bold, you know, Creative Nation statement that he put out. I was just thinking too, in this election campaign, I haven't heard much about sport or science or higher education either. So there are a lot of things missing in this election campaign. I mean, this is a weird election campaign anyway, and lots of things are being talked about that are odd. But I think Sandy's right that, you know, the creativity of people is important. Sandy talked about arts and culture, but creativity in all its forms is very important, something to be celebrated and supported, whether it's in the arts. And I think the other thing I've been thinking about a lot is that we need to make clear that the arts is part of our culture. It is not culture. And I think some of the terminology is getting a little bit confused in the discussion that we're having as an arts community, but also as a broader community.
Claire, are you? What do you think? Were you surprised that that the arts hasn't come up, or was it as you expected?
I think I've got a frog in my throat. Sorry, I'm back with you now.
You were talking about that in the song as well, losing your
That's
voice.
That's right. Yeah, I do that a little bit in circumstances like this. What I feel is that really the broader application, the importance of arts has been overlooked for many, many years, and we don't actually see the incredible possibility that we have to identify, you know, to have a kind of inroad into identifying the health of a nation with our creative arts policy. I just see it as a really wasted opportunity. You've got 2.7 million voters between the ages of 18 and 30. The language that you talk when you're, you know, that you're able to talk in those age brackets, you know, what you're looking for is inspiration and creativity, and you look for that and you look for leadership on these things, and we've seen none of it in this election, and it astonishes me that it's been so overlooked. It's such a missed opportunity for both parties to actually be appealing to that age bracket, and you know, I'm not in that age bracket now, so just as an aside, it's at least as important as sports to us. But it was a good point. You know, sports has, we haven't been talking about higher education and Indigenous issues and all sorts of things in this election. So it's hard for us to squeeze in arts, but I always put up my hand and make an argument for it.
Graham Wood, do you expect better of our politicians?
I think I come to expect a fairly, you know, standoff approach from politicians. I think it's important, though, that we really maintain arts funding and increase arts funding, because I was just having a chat to Marshall before we came on air, and as a venue owner, it's very difficult without funded arts to really keep the integrity and the quality there. There will always be activity, but I think that particularly from a venue perspective, you have to take a fairly commercial line, and in order to help, you know, really with the more cutting edge arts, it's vital to have, you know, a really healthy and vibrant, you know, funding policy. And I think that's where the politicians really need to step up to the plate.
The other person I spoke to yesterday who couldn't be with us today is the pianist, one of Australia's finest pianists, Michael Kieran Harvey. Let's hear what Michael had to say.
I prefer to be freelance because of the compromises associated with being part of a large organisation, and luckily I can do that because I'm a piano player. I think the larger the organisation is and the more dependent it is on government funding is the more it has to toe the line of what that government stands for. And as both choices, major parties that we have are both the same in this country, they're both very right-wing. They're both very much under the thumb of neoconservative values and the religious right. I don't want to have anything to do with that. So I can function outside of that system, but I still have to be paid by various large organisations, of course, whenever I play for a symphony orchestra. But I've just decided that it's far too hard and too time-consuming to go head-on against that mentality, and it's much better to be producing, which I try to do, and to be supporting Australian music, which I hope is going to be a bit more long-lasting than these ideas. I firmly believe, for instance, we're in a post-capitalist world. So the important thing for me is that art will survive. It is the thing that gives a lot of people meaning in their lives, and it's important to be creating it.
Marshall McGuire, you're the Executive Manager of Artistic Planning at the West Australian Symphony Orchestra. Are you under the thumb of the religious right?
No, we're not. I think this is a misconception about large arts companies. I think we've become, as orchestras and opera companies and ballet companies, become a bit of a target for some who don't quite understand the nature of what we do. We never have any instruction from government about what to program or when to program it or where to tour or who to engage. That doesn't happen. We have a very good relationship with the Australia Council now, and we have good dialogue. And I think in this new sort of paradigm of discussion that's going on with big companies and government, there are three things that are missing that I think we've identified as big companies now. One is that you know, we exist because we're actually pretty good at what we do, you know, and we've been around for a long time. Quality takes time to develop, and artists take time to develop, and that's why we're here. We're a very important part of that sort of arts ecosystem, if you like. We're the old growth forest in the woods, you know, and we support a whole lot of other activities that go on. And I think we need to tell that story a lot better. We employ, you know, an opera company, we employ not just singers and conductors and players in the orchestra, but dressmakers and milliners and techs and mechs and designers and painters and librettists and composers. You know, there's a whole, as I say, ecosystem of people that supported their individual creative artists being supported. And people like Michael too, who will come in and play a concerto or do a project, a creative project there. So we're part of that system, and we determine what we do. We talk about it. We take it very, very seriously. You know, my sleepless nights about whether I've programmed enough Australian music in a year that will keep a balance between keeping the composers and keeping the artistic landscape happy and keeping the audience happy. You know, we've got to think about the commercial. It's a strange hybrid that we have. The other thing that Michael said and Claire was saying earlier, and Sandy as well, we need better advocacy from our leaders. We need people to stand up and say, yeah, it is important. And we can think about people in the past, Keating probably the most prominent, Gough Whitlam before that, Dick Hamer, Charles Court here in Perth, you know, Don Dunstan. There are plenty of leaders who said, yes, this is important for our society at this time. We support it and we'll lead the way. Peter Beattie, I think, is another example with the Smart State in Queensland. I mean, he was sort of mocked and derided about that. But it's good to have a vision and good to lead with it from the top. And the other thing is that we want a better dialogue with government. I think that old example of, you know, here's your funding and report back at the end of the year has passed, and we want a more creative dialogue because we can do a whole lot more as big organisations. We can actually create a lot more work for individual artists, and we can cover, you know, vast territories with touring and recording and online applications and so on. So we can do more, and we just need to talk about it more.
One of the things that governments have been better at when it comes to the arts is delivering grants, usually quite small grants, to emerging artists that they've been quite good at sort of encouraging young artists to come through. Claire Bowditch, when you were starting out, did you go looking for a government grant?
I hunted like a lone wolf in the night, hungry. I did. I often tell this story, but the start of my music career, and I've been playing music since I was 17, but about the age of 25, 26, I started going, hang on a minute, let's give it a good crack, because it's the one thing I kept coming back to. And I had so many doubts about how in God's name do you make a living and a life for yourself as an artist or a musician in Australia without, again, attaching yourself to the interests of record companies or, you know, large arts organisations who may need to impose things on you and so on. So I was very interested in this idea of freedom and being able to express myself. So I applied for some Australia Council grants. I was knocked back repeatedly. I didn't fit in any of those categories, or my music didn't at that stage. I went for an Arts Victoria grant, Music for the Future, and was given $7,000, and it was a great deal of money for me at that time. It meant I could take 3 months off work. I was working at Bennett's Lane, I was working at, you know, in retail shops, call centres, whatever I could while I was at uni. And that $7,000 was what allowed me to record Autumn Bone, and then I went on to be able to negotiate a licensing agreement with a record company in Australia, and that was kind of what kick-started my career. So it was incredibly important for me at the time.
I think one of the things that people outside the arts perhaps think mistakenly is that artists, you know, once they get established, are doing okay. But in actual fact, most artists are really not very wealthy at all. I'd like to listen to something else that Sandy Evans said yesterday on the phone.
I have a friend, a very well-known bass player, who's taken up truck driving because he can't really make a living doing his art. And this is a travesty. Part of the reason he's taken up truck driving is in order to buy a travel base. And this is just one example of how things are difficult. If we need to travel to another city to perform, the airlines will charge us a lot of money. They won't give us any concession, whereas they will give sports people a concession for their excess baggage. You know, if you expected that of a geologist, to have to sort of pay for the transport of his own diamond drill to go off looking for oil or something, it would be outrageous. So I think we need to value our natural resources much more.
And by that she means the natural resources of artists. Yeah, this has been your experience too, Claire, that your colleagues have other jobs.
I have friends in some of the most well-known Australian bands who for years worked in car parks during the day to try and just make enough money to basically make ends meet. Now, I've always been known as a musician who has a family, and that has been a driving force in my musical life. I do not think that I could really have sustained the level of work and commitment, and my partner Marty, both of us together, in the Australian music scene if we didn't have three kids to feed. And that's the truth of it, because there's about seven Australian musicians who are very wealthy and deservedly so, and the rest of Australian musicians do it purely, you know, by the scent of an oily rag. And that's not to complain about that, it's to say this is how important it is to so many people. In Melbourne recently, where the Brumby government was threatening, you know, the live music scene was under threat because of legislation to do with liquor licensing, tens of thousands of people came to the slam rally in the city to put up their hand and say, we want our live venues, this matters to us. You know, Victoria does rock and it does matter so much to our identity as a state, and as a, you know, in the broader sense, as a nation. And thankfully, that was listened to by the Brumby government, and there seems there are some changes in place. But it's you know, it's tough. And why do you do it? Because you love it so much, and because it means so much. So it's a place. I think music is a whole lot more practical, and the arts are a whole lot more practical than we think. It's not all just about airy fairy ideas. It's actually about making sense of the things in this world that confuse us, as well as enjoying and entertaining.
Marshall McGuire, I'm assuming that whilst you love being the Director of Artistic Planning at the West Australian Symphony Orchestra, it's also partly because making a living, a full-time living, as a itinerant freelance harpist is out of the question.
It took its toll. And I, you know, I traipsed up and down the East Coast and with the harp in the back of the car on a mattress, and it's tiring and it's hard. And I think Claire makes a really good point, and Sandy too, that we don't necessarily want, you know, buckets of money thrown. We just want it to be a little bit easier. And things like liquor licensing laws are really important. You know, things like, look what happened in New South Wales when the pokies went into the pubs and everybody threw the bans out. It's about local council licensing, zoning. Graham probably know about this, to set up a jazz club in an area. It's about these things that people don't necessarily think about that contribute, you know, touring money to go and actually, every musician I know wants to tour to the rest of Australia. They don't want to sit in the centre of the big cities. They want to tour to small communities, and that happens, but we need more of that. And it's interesting that, you know, the Greens has actually come out with a performing arts policy. It's not an arts policy, it's a very specific policy, and part of that is to increase funding for Playing Australia to get more people out there. Musicians have still got problems getting violins on planes now because you have to put them under, but if you've got a, you know, an incredibly expensive violin, you don't want to thrown in the cargo hold. All these little things contribute to holding back arts practice.
Graham, you do run this venue, the Ellington. Tell us a little bit about that, and then I've got another grab from Sandy, which is relevant, I think.
Well, the Ellington, yes, as it was mentioned before, started in March 2009. We have live music seven nights a week, and predominantly a jazz club, but we do feature a whole range of different musical styles, from you know, original sort of singer-songwriter type shows through to classical music, through to music theatre, cabaret, but predominantly our core business is jazz. In our first year, we did 520 shows and employed 2,586 musicians. So we're a very active live music venue. As you know, I'm a jazz pianist. So, you know, the welfare and well-being of musicians and having a good performance space is vital. I think the thing with the Ellington one of the successes is really it's a frame, and you know, if you've got great music, if you've got great art, if you put it next to the Bain Marie, then it's going to be treated accordingly. Whereas if you put it up on a pedestal and as it deserves to be, and frame it, you know, appropriately, people will respect it and will listen to it a lot more. So that's what the Ellington's all about, is providing that pedestal for musicians to perform and to be able to have an outlet. So that was my passion behind the venue.
You're listening to The Music Show on ABC Radio National. We're talking about arts policy with Claire Bowditch and Marshall McGuire and Graham Wood. And here's Sandy Evans one more time.
I don't know too many people within the jazz scene who could survive just out of performing. You know, at the main jazz gigs in Sydney, you're going to make between $100 and $200 for the concert. And out of that, you're usually having to write all the music, pay for rehearsal studios, pay all your communication and publicity costs. You know, so usually when you sort of look at the bigger picture, you are actually losing money to do a gig. And, you know, I'm not sort of complaining about that, but that is the reality.
Should you be complaining, Graham?
We don't want to be... Sorry,
go on, Claire.
I was just saying none of us want to be seen to be complaining, of course, but for God's sake, you know, the arts are important. The fact that we've got an arts minister and who we haven't seen this election, I don't know where they've been hiding him, and it's thrown in with environment.
He can't be easy to hide, let's be honest.
Graham, go ahead, please.
I don't think that she's complaining. I think she's just really stating the realities of the matter, and that's that, you know, there's not a lot of money in live performance.
It sounds like there's negative amounts of money.
You really have to pay to go out there and perform. I mean, by the time you add everything up, because, you know, it's one thing to have a 2.5-3 hour performance and you get paid $200. Great, that's not a bad whack. You know, you go, oh wow, that person's earning, you know, $80 an hour. That's great, fantastic. But firstly, you can't work 40 hours a week, and that's just purely the performance time. Obviously, Sandy mentioned all the other things that go on behind the scenes, and it really ends up being your whole life. So, it's a lot of musicians, you know, would be battling to do that more than three times a week. That'd be a busy musician, I'd say, in the jazz industry anyway.
One of the policies that the aforementioned Paul Keating introduced was these grants for musicians, well, for artists, I should say, mature artists, successful, established artists who nevertheless were having to spend their days teaching or working in car parks or whatever it was, because one doesn't get richer as one gets older and more famous as an artist most of the time. And this is the opposite, I suppose, of encouraging the young ones. It's a recognition that the established artists also need to be supported. It's partly to do with role models, wouldn't you say, Marshall McGuire?
Absolutely, you're absolutely right. And I think this area, as a sort of middle-aged artist now, you know, if you get through those early years and you do have a career and you do get gigs, people think, great, yeah, you're successful, we don't need to worry about you anymore. We need to worry. You know, it is tough. Sandy, one of the great musicians in this country, that, you know, should be elevated to national hero status for what she does, and with her performing, her composing, her work with young people, all of this work. And somehow there is this feeling that, you know, you get to a certain age and you're fine, you'll look after yourself. This is where the complexity of the landscape comes to the fore, that we all kind of need each other in the performing arts sector to support each other. You know, the big institutions can support, you know, even if, again, coming back to Michael Kieran Harvey, even if Michael only interacts with an orchestra maybe twice a year, it's still really important that audiences get to hear him in that context, that the orchestras themselves get to engage with a creative artist like Michael, that he can then, you know, support some other activities that he's doing. We all do that. I think it's there aren't many musicians in this country who just do one job and that's it. I think the very nature of being a performing artist is you've got this insatiable curiosity, and you if someone's going to ask you to do a gig and you want to do it, you're going to do it. Graham won't tell you he had a very busy night last night doing a whole lot of playing because there was a need for it. There's an audience there. And Sandy made this point too, or Claire, I think, as well, that the reason we perform and we go out there and we do subsidise is because there are audiences who want to hear what we've got to say. You know, we wouldn't be doing it if there weren't audiences and there wasn't the demand for it.
Why are the arts so poor if there are these audiences who demand performances?
I think part of it is that we haven't properly and loudly enough articulated the good stuff that we do. There's a perception still that the arts, in inverted commas, is elitist stuff with people wearing furs and pearls to opera and quaffing champagne and the whole bit.
Darling.
It's not right. It's not there anymore. There's a part of the arts community and the arts audience that does that. But most people who engage with arts practice and performing arts are not from that. You know, the so-called ordinary Australians. I know Ben Eltham was talking about this in an article recently. You know, he's saying ordinary Australians don't go to the arts. Well, we're all ordinary Australians, you know. I grew up on a farm. We didn't have music. Everybody's got a story to tell. And I think to make these false separations of appreciation is wrong. People go to performing arts performances because they're passionate. They want to think. They want to feel. They want to be there with friends. It's a social activity. And they want to be enlightened and entertained as well, God forbid, you know. And we need to tell that story better. As a big organisation, you know, our main focus, we have to get a lot of our money from box office. So we put a lot of energy into selling lots of tickets. But then there are other projects we do. We've got some players up in Carnarvon and Geraldton this week going into schools. We've got a composition project for four young students. We do a whole lot of other things that are under the radar, and I think we need to tell that story better, to say that we are engaging with ordinary Australians, again in inverted commas, and get that advocacy going really strongly from the grassroots.
Claire Bowditch, are you an ordinary Australian?
I'm an ordinary Australian. Yes, I certainly am.
Very good.
Thank you so much for... No, look, I won't go there. Of course, yes, I think there's no doubting. I went into the arts because it was a place that made the most sense to me. But again, I just want to point out that I think that's an excellent point that you just made. We need to create the correct narrative for the role of arts in Australia. And again, I'll just point back to, you know, we have tens of thousands of people going to sporting matches on the weekend because they're involved, they're engaged, and we need to make sure that arts is not viewed as an elitist event, that it is, again, a just enjoyable, practical. It's good for our physical health. It's good for our mental health too. So we've got the ordinary kind of, you know, day-to-day applications. We need kids in state schools who are given the right to and encouraged to learn instruments because it's a place for them to achieve a sense of self-esteem and a sense of creative expression too. And then we've also got the specialty kind of areas where it can be useful, and it's something I spoke with Professor Patrick McGorry about the other day, just briefly. But the way, for example, an organisation in Melbourne called Aardvark will encourage young people who have had struggles with mental illness to go, and they will support them in creating music that expresses their experience, and you find there's such positive follow through with early intervention, and that's another place that music can play a primary role. And Radio National just last week had the Freezer Central Naked in the Woods CD as their album of the week, and that's a youth mentoring program that I'm a part of, along with, you know, a dozen other Australians here in Melbourne. There's all these great ways that music can actually be used, not just in, you know, in the higher levels, and not just in popular music. It's practical.
And it's also about role models again, isn't it?
Spot on. You know, I search high and low for stories and role models in Australia when I was starting off in music, just so I could think, dear universe, please let me know it is possible to make my living out of making art, and I want to know there are other people out there who've done it in Australia. And I did find them, and I found other incredible people who are the best known in their field of music, who have 25 arias sitting on their mantelpiece, but still, you know, get their phone bill cut off. And that's the story too. But, you know, someone like Paul Kelly I've always put up as an inspirer of other young artists and other, you know, old artists and all artists, because he managed to tell a story and create a great body of work and make a living out of it.
We have to leave it there, but thank you very much indeed, Claire Bowditch, Graham Wood and Marshall McGuire, for being my guests on today's show. The major political parties have still got a week to get out their arts policies.
Come on, guys.
There is a rumour that Peter Garrett is announcing something tomorrow. This rumour, by the way, came to me from the press secretary of the shadow arts minister. That's how I found out about it. And he says that the Liberal Party are also intending to announce an arts policy, but he still isn't quite sure when. So there you go. Thanks very much for being on The Music Show, three of you.